Are you looking for a new basketball shoe? If so, this is Gary Parrish here to tell you that the New Balance 2-Way V4 features the groundbreaking use of fuel cell technology with fresh foam, creating the ultimate combination of rebound and cushioning. Every step feels explosive and dynamic, and the upper construction features a lightweight textile that's supportive and breathable. So whether you're hitting the clutch shot or locking down the opposition, the 2-Way V4 gives you the tools to play at a high level. Learn more and purchase the 2-Way at newbalance.com.
The all-new Hyundai 2024 Santa Fe is equipped with everything you need to break free from the dull work week and embark on an adventurous weekend with your family. The Hyundai Santa Fe's features like available H-Track all-wheel drive, standard third row seating, available dual wireless charging pads. You've got the H-Track all-wheel drive so you can take on those dirt trails and kick up some mud. Or the third row seating gets your whole family in to experience the thrill together. The dual wireless charging pads make sure that no one gets stuck in the great outdoors with a dead cell phone. Think about those adventurous activities you can do, like me, taking a ski trip up with the family, maybe going on a camping expedition, anything and everything. Learn more about the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe at HyundaiUSA.com. Call 562-314-4603 for complete details.
Hey there. Gary Parrish, welcome back to the CBS Sports Eye on College Basketball Podcast, where we sometimes discuss camel fighting, dodo birds, and leaky black. Cal Boone is here with me. If you're watching us on YouTube, go ahead and smash that like button like you're branded. If you have consent, and if you haven't yet subscribed to the YouTube channel, please go ahead and knock that out while you're here. All right, Strong Jaw, the story of the weekend is obviously Purdue. The Boilermakers went to Portland to participate in the Phil Knight Legacy Tournament, beat West Virginia by 12, Gonzaga by 18, Duke by 19. So after being unranked in the preseason by AP voters, even though I spent the entire offseason telling AP voters why Purdue should be ranked, the Boilermakers are now 6-0 with four wins over top 60 KenPom teams, including double-digit victories over the teams that were number 2 and number 7 in the preseason AP poll. As a result, I've moved Purdue up to number 3 in the top 25 and one behind only Texas and Houston. Kyle Boone, what do you make of Purdue blasting everybody to win the Phil Knight Legacy?
Really, really impressive stuff from Purdue over the weekend. Zach Edey is completely unstoppable. That was my big takeaway from watching Purdue against Duke. I think it was more impressed by Duke than it was impressed by Purdue. Excuse me, than it was concerned about Duke. To me, I think there are some concerns about Duke, and we can probably get to those in a bit. But what Purdue did this week was really impressive, and I think eye-opening. Kind of adjust expectations accordingly, because coming into the season, did not think that Purdue was a team that was, you know, ranked inside the top 25. Not sure that they had a roster that validated as much. But Zach Edey is so good, and the pieces around him fit so well that I think Purdue absolutely has to be in that conversation, obviously. And I mean, he was making Derek Lively, you know, a top 3 recruit from last year, look like Jalen Duren, like too little, like 7'1", 230 pounds. He's looking too little out there. And Edey's a monster. And just the way that he moves is so, it makes it hard for officials to officiate him. It makes it hard for 7'1", 230 pound centers who are probably going to be top 10 picks to defend him. And if Purdue is going to play this way, like I think you have to adjust expectations. Purdue's going to be a team that's going to be a factor in the Big Ten title race this season.
And we're going to get to Duke's struggles, specifically Derek Lively's struggles in a moment. But this Purdue thing is really interesting. You're exactly right that if you took a deep dive into the roster that Matt Painter was bringing back this season, it did not suggest top 25 team. But the reason I ranked Purdue in the preseason top 25 and one, I had them 24th, is because even if the roster didn't look top 25 good, the coach undeniably is. Like, again, I had Purdue 24th in the preseason top 25 and won. Got asked about it all the time because Purdue lost four of the top seven scorers from last season's team, among them Jaden Ivey, Trevion Williams, enrolled zero top 75 high school prospects, zero heralded transfers. Yep. But I still ranked Purdue because of Matt Painter. I literally wrote all offseason, like from April to November, that Matt Painter, quote, deserves the benefit of the doubt based on the consistency with which he runs his program. And that was backed up by the fact that Purdue has finished top 25 at KenPom in seven straight years. Doesn't matter who comes, who goes, as long as Matt Painter's there. The seven consecutive years they've finished top 25 at KenPom. Been to seven straight NCAA tournaments, been to four of the past five Sweet 16s. So if you're going to blindly believe in some program, that's the type of program to blindly believe in. Mm-hmm. And so I decided to believe in Purdue, and so far it's proven to be a good decision. As I pointed out on Twitter yesterday, this Purdue team has a starting lineup with five guys, all of whom were ranked outside of the top 90 of their high school classes, and they just pounded a Duke team with five starters who were ranked inside the top 30 of their high school classes. Here's Purdue's starting lineup. Braden Smith, ranked 196th in the class of 2022.
Yep.
Fletcher Lawyer, ranked 94th in the class of 2022. Ethan Morton, ranked 103rd in the class of 2020. Mason Gillis, ranked 220th in the class of 2019. And Zach Edey, ranked 440th in the class of 2020. So I don't know what's wilder. Being able to have what appears to be a legitimate Big Ten contender slash Final Four contender slash national championship contender with a starting lineup featuring five guys, all of whom are ranked outside of the top 90 of their high school classes, or the star of your team being ranked 440th in his high school class, or, and this is the one that is really interesting to me, they got a starting backcourt of freshmen who were ranked 94th and 196th. These aren't guys that on a very surface level in a vacuum are not supposed to be playing at a high level for a Big Ten program right from the jump. And they look like one of the best backcourts in the country. So all of this is pretty incredible. I don't know how many other coaches could be really good with this type of roster, but I know Matt Painter can and is, and it's turned into, I think, the biggest, most notable early season story in college basketball.
Yeah, I totally agree. Talked to someone at Purdue in the preseason who tipped me off that Braden Smith would be important for this team. And he has been so far a very, very steadying presence in the backcourt. A guy who was Mr. Indiana basketball in 2022. Steps onto campus is an immediate starter. He was really solid for Purdue this week. Fletcher Lawyer had a huge game on Sunday, 18 points. That's his best game with Purdue so far. Caleb First has been solid. The guys on paper, the starters on this team, I think you can stack them up to other Big Ten teams, and you could reasonably say that it's not as good as, I don't know, five, six, seven of the top seven in the Big Ten. But Zach Edey is, I think, maybe the best player in the Big Ten right now, one of the best players in the Big Ten. And the way that the pieces fit so neatly around Edey, I think it's a credit to Matt Painter, the way that he has built that system, that the pieces just seem to fit. They seem to work. And they play their own style. They play kind of a plodding pace kind of around Zach Edey. They grind teams to a halt, and it's working so far. It's kind of a unique system in the way that they play. But we saw it at the PK 85, like teams are going to have a real problems trying to defend this Purdue team because of how many different weapons they have around Zach Edey.
I mean, Edey is perhaps your leading candidate for National Player of the Year right now.
Yep.
Listen, it's early. These seasons are long. There's a lot of twists and turns. I think if you start talking too matter-of-factly about anything, positive or negative, at this point in the season, you're really opening yourself up to looking silly come February, March, even early April. But Edie, I mean, this isn't out of nowhere. I mean, this guy's been a great college player for, you know, at least a couple of years now. And his numbers at this point in the season are outrageous. I mean, 21.7 points, 12 rebounds per game, 2.3 blocks in 29.7 minutes per contest. He is currently leading the Big Ten in points, rebounds, and blocks per game. So, listen, you know, let's not eliminate Trace Jackson Davis and everybody else from Big Ten Player of the Year conversation already. But certainly, if you were turning in a ballot right now, Zach Edey, I think, would have to be at the top of it. Up next for Purdue, and then we'll move on, is Wednesday at Florida State, which in the preseason looked like a good game between two top 25-ish teams. Florida State is 1-7 now, like shockingly bad. So Purdue will be a favorite at Florida State. And then after that, won't play another top 25 KenPom team until they play at Ohio State on January 5th. So I'm not trying to get too far ahead of ourselves, but like a 14-0 start is very possible for this Purdue team. Again, really one of the more remarkable stories of this still very, very young season.
Yeah, two things I'll add here. KenPom has an MVP feature it gives to the MVP of each game. I don't know if you saw this or not, but when you click through to its box score, you can see on Purdue's side, Edie has been the MVP in games against Duke, team that has Derek Lively, Jeremy Roach, Tariq Whitehead, against Gonzaga, team that has Drew Timmy, Julian Strother, and every other game as well, West Virginia, Marquette, Austin Peay, Milwaukee. So he has been the star not only, you know, of Purdue, but basically of every game he's played in, and he's played against some really high-level competition. One other thing I'll add, did you see Jared Burson's stat over the weekend about Purdue and its win?
I did, and I made a note of it, and then I forgot to put it in my actual notes, so please share it, but I am aware of what you're talking about.
Yeah, Purdue beat Gonzaga, which is, you know, they were number 6 in the AP poll on Sunday. That will change on Monday, by 18 points on Friday night, and beat Duke, number 8 in the AP poll, again on Sunday. That will change on Monday, by 19 points on Sunday. They are the second team ever to beat two AP top 10 teams by 18 or more points on a neutral site in the same week. The only team to do that before was UCLA in the 1968 Final Four. And of course, that was a pretty good UCLA team. Yeah,
pretty good UCLA team. It was obviously coached by the second best coach in UCLA history, John Wooden. Yep. So, listen, anytime you're doing something that's the first time this has been done since the 1960s, like, you're doing something. Purdue has been absolutely tremendous. Let's talk Duke for a second because they're on the other side of this. Blue Devils are starting 4 freshmen. They're now 6-2, losses to Kansas and Purdue. They got 0 top 30 KenPom wins. They look, let's be kind, shaky at best under first-year coach John Shire. And Derek Lively, who at one point, and I think for much of his senior year, was considered the number 1 player in his class, is just giving them absolutely nothing. He had 0 points on 3 shots against Purdue. Mm-hmm. I mean, this is a guy who projects. I mean, I had him lower than most in the offseason in my initial 2023 NBA mock draft. I had him back into the lottery, and that was at the time lower than most. And that was mostly just he's a traditional center, and those guys are not valued this way in the NBA anymore. But he has been I think I wrote whatever might limit Derek Lively as an NBA draft prospect is not going to prevent him from being an awesome college basketball player.
Yeah.
And yet he is not even close to he's not even a good college basketball player right now. Again, early, but he's averaging 2.7 points, 3.3 rebounds in 17.3 minutes per game. Not closing game, not closing games. He looks lost, uncomfortable, overwhelmed at times. How concerned are you about Duke in general and Derek Lively specifically, both as a college player and as an NBA draft prospect, because you obviously, you know, think about and write about these things in both ways.
Concerned but not panicked on Duke. Important context here with kind of the injury situation with this team. Jeremy Roach was in and out on Sunday with a foot injury. Hopefully he is going to be okay. He seemed to be fighting through something for most of that game. Dariq Whitehead had, you know, a foot injury in the preseason, had surgery. He's come back, and I think he's still working his way back to full health. He hasn't been kind of the difference maker that maybe we expected. Derek Lively, same thing. You know, he's been dealing with a calf injury. So far, he has not produced in the way that I think we expected a guy of his caliber to produce. And then Kyle Filipowski, the guy who was the third highest ranked recruit in that recruiting class, has actually been kind of the most productive freshman from that class. He's been really, really impressive.
He's been great.
And so, yeah, I think it's going to take some time for this Duke team to kind of get its legs underneath it. It reminds me a little bit, if you go back to, I guess, last year, AJ Griffin was in a similar boat, right? He was banged up in the preseason. Duke made a concerted effort to methodically work him back over a period of not days, not weeks, but months. I mean, I think it wasn't until conference play where he was playing over 20 minutes per game. And so I think Duke is doing the right thing by easing back its top stars from injury, knowing that, you know, these games are important, obviously, for NCAA tournament seeding, for, you know, national perception, for ranking, et cetera. But this team is playing for March and hopefully for April. And to do that, I think you have to have your best guys playing their best basketball at the most important time. This is not the most important time, but from what I've seen from Whitehead and Lively, it's going to take them maybe a little bit longer than normal from what you would expect from, like, you know, top five-star recruits. And I think they'll eventually get there, but from what we've seen from Lively, like, I still think he's going to be a lottery pick. Still think Dariq Whitehead is going to be a lottery pick. But the light has not completely flickered on for both of those guys. And I think Duke will have to have both those guys really humming to kind of reach their potential.
I think a couple of things can be true at the same time. I like that John is in key moments of close games late, getting away from Derek Lively and Dariq Whitehead, you know, proving, hey, like, listen, you guys were, you know, top four players in the class of 2022, projected lottery picks, but like, we got games to win. I'm not going to keep you on the court just because where you were ranked coming out of high school. I like that. On the other hand, it is true that if you're going to be the best version of yourself, you need those guys eventually. Yep. And so the good news for Duke is that, you know, up next is the ACC Big Ten Challenge. And according to a report from Andy Katz this morning, we are on the verge of ending the ACC Big Ten Challenge because of you know, television contracts and so that will be coming to an end. But we still got it this season, and it's Duke, Ohio State inside Cameron Indoor on Wednesday. That's obviously going to be challenging. Ohio State is good. After that, ACC opener against Boston College on Saturday, then Iowa next Tuesday. But then after that Iowa game, Duke won't play another currently ranked team until it plays North Carolina on February 4th. It's November 28th. Jeez. And after Duke plays Iowa next Tuesday, they will not play another currently ranked team until February 4th. So there's a lot of games in there that should allow them to, I think, let Derek Lively play through mistakes. Mm-hmm. Let Dariq Whitehead play through mistakes. Allow them to get comfortable. And that's where you can commit to, all right, hey, you're getting 30 minutes tonight because, you know, whether you're good or not, and again, nothing's absolute, but we're going to let you play through mistakes because ultimately, if we're going to be great, we need you to be great. And that starts with you being comfortable and good. You got to be good before you can be great. And again, these seasons are so long. Like, we might look up in middle of January and Derek Lively looks like the most dominant big in the country. I don't think so, but yeah. With all the other bigs that are in college, but like, I'm not ruling anything out about him because there's a reason he was at one point ranked the number one player in his high school class, but the early returns are noticeably not good. And that's among the reasons, not the only reason, but among the reasons Duke has been just okay. And that's not just based on the results of games. Like, that's according to all of the data, statistical stuff. You know, they're only shooting 29.1% from three. That ranks 302nd nationally. So when you're one of your five-star bigs is non-existent and you can't shoot at all, like, that's a problem. But you know, there's a lot of reasons why Duke has just looked okay. But again, it's early and there's still plenty of time to get this stuff right. And like I said, after they get past Iowa, the schedule lightens up for an extended period of time, which should allow for a lot of opportunities for individuals to grow and for the team to look more like what those of us who thought they would be good anticipated them looking like. Again, I started the Duke conversation by pointing out they're starting four freshmen. That's not easy to do. Like, even the great one-and-done teams, like Kentucky 2012 or Duke 2015, those teams did not start four freshmen. They started like three, and then they had two non-freshmen in the starting lineup. This Duke team is heavily reliant on first-year guys, and at least two of the guys they anticipated being stars are just, you know, not really – not even good at this point. So we'll see where it goes from here.
So you're not panicking on Duke. I saw you.
I would move them down
in the rankings. I think 16 on Sunday.
Yeah, and I think I'll move them down. Yeah. I have updated the top 25 and one this morning. It just hasn't published yet. I've got Duke down to 18. I'm not panicking on them. That's but right. In the preseason, I had the ACC, like most people, North Carolina, Duke, Virginia, and I might. In fact, I definitely would if you gave me the opportunity. I would redo that now.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah, I would probably have Virginia one in the ACC. And, you know, then we could have a conversation about where to go from there. But right now,
Florida State, too.
Yeah. You know, some people had Florida State ranked in the preseason. I was hesitant to do that. I did not do that because I just wondered, like, yeah, they're bringing back a lot of, like, interesting players, but they were all players on a bad team last season. Are they really going to be just go from bad to top 25? I guess, but I was skeptical. I didn't think Florida State would be this bad. Like 1-7, that's crazy. I didn't think that's crazy. And so, yeah, the ACC is a bit of a mess. One of the reasons Duke is going to go this long stretch without playing a currently ranked team from like early December till early February is because of a lack of quality teams in the ACC. And that's a reality for a lot of different reasons. I didn't mean to take this conversation this way, but like, you know, Syracuse is one of your big brands. It's down. Louisville is one of your big brands. It's down. When your big brands aren't very good, but they're actually bad, then that's how your league slips in national stature. And that's clearly something that's happening to the ACC right now. So if I could redo it, I'd put Virginia at the top and then I'd, you know, figure it out. But no, I'm not giving up on Duke or North Carolina. And we'll get to the Tar Heels here in a second. Elsewhere in Portland, you know, there were two 18 tournaments there, Phil Knight Legacy and Phil Knight Invitational. Purdue was a big winner, but so was UConn. We're going to talk about the Huskies next. First, though, a word from our partners.
If you're in the market for investment-worthy bags, watches, and fine jewelry, Rebag is the answer. Rebag is a luxury resale marketplace where each piece is carefully vetted and verified by experts to ensure quality and authenticity. If you're in the market, use Rebag to buy and sell finds from the world's top brands, including Hermes, Chanel, and Cartier. Head to Rebag.com to get 10% off your first purchase with code REBAG10. Shop today at Rebag.com. That's REBAG.com. And use promo code REBAG10 for 10% off your first purchase.
Did you know that while over 60% of Americans dream of starting their own business, less than 20% of them take the first step? The reason? Building a business is tough. Taylor Brands is simplifying the business journey. From launching and managing to growing your business, Taylor Brands isn't just another tool. It's your online business partner from launch to success. With Taylor Brands, building your dream business becomes an effortless experience. Their comprehensive platform guides you through every step, ensuring you have everything you need in one place. From LLC formation to bookkeeping, invoicing to acquiring licenses and permits, and even setting up your bank account, Taylor Brands handles it all seamlessly. And our listeners will receive 35% off Taylor Brands LLC formation plans using our link, taylorbrands.com/CBS Sports. That's TAILORBRANDS.com/CBS Sports. So start your business journey today with Taylor Brands.
So Purdue won the Phil Knight legacy. That's the big headline from the weekend, considering the Boilermakers did beat Gonzaga and Duke to get that done. But UConn also got a trophy. The Huskies beat Oregon, Alabama, and Iowa State to win the Phil Knight Invitational. So they're 8-0, three top 50 KenPom wins. Strong Jaw, I see a comment in the YouTube chat that says you were higher on UConn than most. Is that true?
That is true, my friend.
How high were you on UConn? Because I've now got them, I believe, up to number six in the top 25 and one. I had them preseason top 25 and one, but I don't know that I would have predicted an 8-0 start with three top 50 KenPom wins.
I don't think I projected that either, but I did have UConn projected at number two in the Big East coming into the season. I was the only person, I think, on our panel to have UConn ahead of Villanova, which right now is looking pretty good. I had a Creighton, UConn, Villanova in my Big East preseason picks. And I woke up this morning to someone who tagged me on Twitter reminding me of this. And usually it's you wake up and you get a mention on Twitter and it's, oh, shoot, what did I say? But this was actually a good one. And I basically, went in and said, I'm full stand on Dane Hurley and UConn this season. I think they'll be a challenger to Creighton in the Big East and the clear number two in the league ahead of Villanova. I also projected that they would be a number three seed this year or maybe higher. And so far that's looking pretty good. They've looked really solid, obviously taking down Oregon, Alabama, and Iowa State. Only team right now at KenPom with both a top 10 offense and a top 10 defense in adjusted efficiency. I have a trivia time for you, GP. Are you ready?
Of course I'm ready. Let's go.
Okay. Four champions, four NCAA tournament champions over the last decade have finished top 10 in both offensive and defensive efficiency at KenPom. Can you name them? Can you name the most recent one? Or if bonus points if you get all four.
Top 10 in offense and defense?
That's right.
Okay. Most recent? Was it Kansas last season?
Was not Kansas.
Damn it. Then it was Baylor year before. Well, that's awful.
It's terrible.
Well, then it was Virginia in 2019.
It was.
Okay. I knew that one. Mm-hmm. 2015 Duke?
Not 2015 Duke.
Okay, we're going to chalk this up as a trivia time loss. Give me the answers.
Virginia in 2019, Villanova in 2015-16.
Of course. The Villanova team was awesome.
It was. Louisville in 2012-13 had the number one defense that year. And Kentucky in 2011-2012. Those were the four in the last decade.
I would have assumed the Kentucky team if I would have counted back that far. Listen, UConn looks terrific. We talked about dominant big man. Adama Sanogo has been great so far. Not unexpected. He was really good last season, but he's averaging 18.5 points, 7 rebounds per game, shooting 63.3% from the field. They're getting good stuff from Tristan Newton. I always believed that Dan Hurley would be able to get this UConn program, back to, the place it held for a long time in college basketball under Jim Calhoun. And it looks like we're there. It's not a bunch of five-star top 10 recruits, projected lottery pick type of guys, like some of those great UConn teams had, but it's rock solid. And are you ready to go so far as to say UConn, not Creighton, is the favorite in the Big East? I'm certainly willing to be open to the possibility. I obviously had Creighton projected to win the Big East like everybody else. I had Villanova after that, like most others. And this Villanova thing, yes, they're dealing with injuries, but this is really bad as well. Like a historically bad Villanova season, it appears is underway. At least to this point in the season, it's been historically bad. Yeah. And then, I don't want to misquote myself, but I had UConn, let's be fair and honest, significantly behind Creighton. And yet, I don't think there's much of a gap between those teams right now. There might not be a gap at all.
Yeah, let's do it. UConn is the favorite to win the Big East. I think I can make that change right now based off what we've seen from both teams to start the season. I definitely was on Creighton. I still think Creighton has very, very high potential this season. But from what we've seen from UConn this season so far, with Sanoga just completely dominating, this team has so many different pieces that have stepped up in big ways. I think they are the favorite to win the Big East. I would take the Huskies over Creighton right now if I'm making my picks.
Right. In the top 25 and one right now, as it updates on Monday, I've still got Texas at one, followed by Houston at two, Purdue up to three, Arizona four, Virginia five, UConn six, one spot ahead of Creighton. And then Arkansas at eight, Gonzaga at nine, Alabama at 10. So as of right now, I do have UConn as the highest rated Big East team. They've looked the part so far. Dan Hurley's got a team that I think can not only compete with Creighton in the Big East, but compete with, you know, anybody. That's the other thing about this season so far, is that like there's a lot of teams that look great. Mm-hmm. But I don't think there's of the teams that look great early, Texas, Houston, Purdue, Arizona, Virginia, UConn, all the teams I just named, like none of them have this like overwhelming amount of NBA talent that makes you go, they're just, you know, you're dealing with three top 10 picks there, or three lottery picks, or three top 20 picks. Like, what are you going to do against those guys? None of them have really nice talent, but I don't think any of them have overwhelming NBA talent, which makes it reasonable to say things like, I could certainly see Texas winning the national championship, or Houston. Yeah. Or Purdue, or Arizona, or Virginia, or UConn, or Creighton, or Arkansas, or Gonzaga, or Alabama, or, you know, Illinois, or Tennessee, or, you know, Baylor, or Indiana. Like, there's if you're putting together teams that can actually win six, a list of teams that can win six games in the NCAA tournament, like, that list can be pretty long right now. And it's not a team necessarily with a whole bunch of NBA players. It's just there's a lot of very good college basketball teams, which has made this season fun so far. Obviously, most of the attention over the weekend was in Portland. And on the positive side of things, it's Purdue, it's UConn. On the other side of things, it's probably North Carolina. You know, the reason UConn didn't play North Carolina in the title game of the Phil Knight Invitational is because North Carolina lost to Iowa State on Friday. And then North Carolina lost to Alabama on Sunday in four overtimes, which is a wild game. So this North Carolina team that was number one in the preseason AP poll is now 5-2. No good wins. Two losses to teams ranked outside of the top 10. While acknowledging there was a lesson to be learned last season about, you know, panicking as it pertains to North Carolina's struggles too early, there's no getting around the fact that this team has been a disappointment so far this season. And it's not just because the record's 5-2. Frankly, they haven't looked good at any point this season. Yeah, they won their first five games, but it was like they were shaky in those. They trailed in four of their first five games against basically nothing competition. And then when they started playing, you know, good teams, it hasn't gone well. What do you make of North Carolina's uneven start?
Yeah, it's been a really rough start for them. They look shaky out of the gate to start the season. UNC Wilmington was a close game that shouldn't have been a close game. Barely put away Gardner Webb. They go to Portland, and Portland gives them a good fight.
Right.
Close, you know, with losses to Iowa State. Obviously, the four overtime game against Alabama, they lose that one. I was impressed with their fight on Sunday. They seemed really engaged for the first time all season. But still, organizationally, they are just in crunch time. They're just kind of a mess, and you know, they've got guys who are glue guys who can make winning plays. Like Puff Johnson consistently shows up, and he's hustling and scrapping for a loose ball. Or Seth Trimble in the fourth overtime made a hustle play that gave North Carolina a chance late. Leaky Black, obviously the best player in college basketball by far. Everyone was locked in, but I don't know. It's just like when the chips are down, you know, late in a game, it's like, okay, let's dribble for 29 seconds and then throw up a 38 footer for three. Like that is just, they're just a little bit of a chaos, kind of a mess right now. Their talent is obviously there. Amanda Baycott, Caleb Love, RJ Davis, like, the pieces are in place for them to eventually figure this out. They're 5-2. They're not 2-5. So I don't think you can completely panic, but definitely disappointing, especially given the fact that they were the preseason number one team in college basketball. They just have not looked like that.
Yeah. I'm still going to believe that North Carolina is going to get this figured out. I'm going to learn a lesson from last season. They got it figured out last season. And I get a little frustrated because especially over the past couple of games, you'll see a lot of stuff on Twitter like, this team just got hot in the NCAA tournament and then everybody overrated them. And that's not what happened. It's just not. That's revisionist history. Yes, the team played well in the NCAA tournament. They were playing well before the NCAA tournament. Yep. This was a team that was really good, like one of the best teams in the country, for about a 7 or 8 week stretch to end the season. It wasn't just the tournament started and North Carolina got hot. That's more what UCLA did the year before. Or 2 years prior when they went on that Final Four run. UCLA is absolutely a team that the tournament started and they went wild. But North Carolina was playing well before the NCAA tournament started. So I'm a little dismissive of that type of observation just because it's not rooted in reality. But it is true that North Carolina wasn't good for much of last season. But they did get it right. And I'm going to... And four of the starters from that team are back, and the only variable is Pete Nance in for Brady Manick. And Pete Nance has been good. Like, has he been as good as Brady Manick was? Maybe not, but he's been good. He's not the problem, at least not from my perspective. Pete Nance is not, well, you know, they lost Brady Manick and they brought in Pete Nance, and that's not the problem. Pete Nance is averaging 12-5 on 42% shooting from three. Brady Manick averaged 15-6 on 40% shooting from three. So advantage Manick on the offensive end. I'll give it to you. But, that's one shot and one rebound per game. They're both playing, I think Nance is around 30 minutes a game. Manick played around 30 minutes per game. Pete Nance is playing his role well. It's just the other stuff is a little not right. And a lot of it is Caleb Love. Like you mentioned, dribble it for 20 seconds and then fire up a three. That's Caleb Love. And like he took a million shots against Alabama. Granted, it was four overtimes, but like he took a lot of shots. 36 maybe.
36.
And he's now shooting 24.5% from three on 17.4 shots per game. So he's an interesting player in the sense that he can create his own shot very easily. And when he's making them, he looks like, oh, wow, this guy is one of the best players in college basketball. Looks like an NBA player. But the problem is that he is somebody who can create his shot whenever he wants, but he doesn't make it that often.
Yep.
And that was on full display in Portland, especially in the game against Alabama. As a team, North Carolina also is shooting terribly from three. Pete Nance is good, Rest of the team, not so much. Team shooting 30.8% from three. They're 12th in adjusted offensive efficiency, 47th in adjusted defensive efficiency, according to KenPom. And so a lot of their issues are on the defensive end of the court. And I don't necessarily think they're bad, but they're certainly – they haven't played well. I'll be surprised if they don't get this figured out and have some stretch where they win like 8 of 9. And, you know, at some point we're opening a podcast talking about, well, here's North Carolina. They flipped it again and looked like real national championship contenders. Like, that's what I expect to happen. Yeah. But if you're a North Carolina fan hoping that what you looked like last March was going to carry over to this November, it just has not carried over for a variety of reasons.
Yep. I've got a double trivia time for you. Second
okay,
one.
Okay, KB.
Is legal? Okay. Only one power conference player over the last decade has taken more shots in a game than Caleb Love did on Sunday. Can you name the player?
It sounds like something
he's
Buddy Hield would have tried.
Oh, you were in the right conference and possibly the right school.
Trae Young?
Trae Young took 39 shots against Oklahoma State in 2018.
Yeah, that sounds like something he would do.
Yes. 39 shots.
I was about to say Trae Young, and then I was like, but he also, did he lead the nation in assists per game that season as well? So I was like, he passed a lot too.
He did, yes.
Okay,
yes.
Yeah. So I was going to say Trae Young, but then I went Buddy Hield. So I was in the ballpark.
You're right on it. Love it.
Yeah, so that Caleb Love, he'll have better performances than that, and North Carolina's gonna need him to if they're going to do any of the things most people thought they would be able to do in the preseason. For what it's worth, like I explained in I guess Saturday morning's top 25 and one after North Carolina lost, I do not tend to drop teams in the top 25 and one for winning unimpressively. Like, you win. I'm not going to punish you. You might get jumped, but I won't push you down for winning unimpressively. But when you start to lose, then I adjust accordingly. And I don't get too caught up in, oh, it's a 15 spot drop or a 20. Like, you know, I will believe in you until you give me a reason not to. And then I'll put you where I think you belong at this moment. So I've got North Carolina all the way down to number 20 in the top 25 and one. And the reason is because, like, when you look at the resume, there's nothing there, no good wins. And they lost to an Iowa State team. Now, TJ Osterberger might be over achieving for the second straight year. But, you know, that's the Iowa State team that, you know, lost a lot from last season's team that went to the Sweet 16 and, you know, wasn't getting any sort of preseason attention as a top 25 team. I did move Iowa State into the top 25 and one after the win over North Carolina, if only because, like, at that point, undefeated with a win over North Carolina, like, you got to be ranked. And so I've got Iowa State at 19 now, one spot ahead of North Carolina. Iowa State, of course, subsequently lost to UConn out in Portland. But yeah, early returns for North Carolina, a little bit like Duke for different reasons, but shaky. The two big basketball brands in that state off to rough start. So we'll see if they can get that thing turned around. Up next for North Carolina and Duke again, you've got games in the ACC Big Ten Challenge. Kyle Boone, thank you for being here so early on a Monday morning. And for people who are regular listeners of the Ion College Basketball Podcast who might be wondering, okay, why were you Monday morning instead of Sunday night? And why were you earlier than normal on a Monday morning than say you would be on a different? We're going to try to be consistent with the dates and times, days of the weeks and times with these things, but our schedules are all over the place. The reason Norlander's not here is because he's traveling home from Portland. You know, when we planned this, there was a chance the number one team in America would be playing a game that tipped late on Sunday. That would have been North Carolina. And if they were to lose it, then it's the number one team in the country losing its first game of the season. Because if they'd been playing in it, they would have been undefeated at that point. And that's the type of thing that you lead a podcast with. And I didn't think doing a podcast at midnight on a Sunday in November made much sense for anybody. So we decided to do Monday morning. And then my little guy is getting his tonsils taken out this morning. Oof. So, yeah, I know. Like he's had strep throat a million times, and finally it's just been recommended to get the tonsils taken out. So we're in for a rough week, it sounds like, because one of his little buddies just got his tonsils taken out. And we talked to the mother yesterday, and she was like, this is day five post removal, and this has been the worst day so far. So idea that it's bad one day and then it gets better, it doesn't sound like that's true. I'm hopeful. In order to make sure I could get to the hospital on time to be with my guy, we had to start this thing at 9 o'clock Eastern, 8 o'clock Central. So that's the explanation why we were on Monday morning instead of Sunday night, and on a little earlier than Monday than we would normally be. But we're going to try to get back on schedule this week, and that would mean the next episode coming Wednesday at 11 a.m. Eastern, at which point we will look back at the first night of the ACC Big Ten Challenge and look ahead to a Wednesday night of games that on a surface level seem pretty compelling. So we're going to talk to you again Wednesday at 11 a.m. Eastern. Shouts to Devin Downey. Shouts to Chester, South Carolina. Shouts to Larnell. Shouts to Huck. And thank you guys once again for listening to the Island College Basketball Podcast. If you're not subscribed, please go subscribe anywhere you subscribe to podcasts, including Apple Podcasts and Spotify. 5 stars, nice review. There's more of us than there are of them. Like I said, we'll talk to you Wednesday, 11 a.m. Eastern. Till then, take care.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.